Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. My name's Mike Fenton-Stevens, and My Time Capsule is a podcast where people tell me 5 things from their life they wish they had in a time capsule. They pick 4 things that they cherish and 1 thing that they'd like to bury and forget. Now, my guest in this episode has been better known by the name of one of the characters he created, Lee Nelson, but his real name is Simon Brodkin. Simon is an award-winning stand-up comedian, writer, and performer, and is well known for his own television shows, such as Lee Nelson's World Good Show, and his appearance on many others as various characters, including the footballer Jason Bent. Simon has been a smash hit at the Edinburgh Festival and on the comedy circuit, and he's gained worldwide fame through his astonishing and daring stunts, such as throwing a large pile of cash over Sepp Blatter, joining Kanye West on stage at Glastonbury, interrupting Theresa May's conference speech when she was Prime Minister by handing her a P45, purportedly from Boris Johnson, and spreading a large number of golf balls at the feet of Donald Trump at his Turnberry golf course. Each ball had a swastika emblazoned on it. It's amazing he wasn't shot by the Secret Service. Simon is now back with an outrageous new stand-up show, Screwed Up, where he rips into celebrity culture, social media, the police, Putin, Prince Andrew, and Jesus. In fact, as has always been the case, nothing is off limits to Simon, including his own mental health, his family, his 5 arrests, and how he once found himself at an underground sex party. Haven't we all? So let's see what the most viewed British comedian of all time on TikTok has to say about his life and the 5 things he wants from it in a time capsule. Here is the unique but highly adaptable Simon Brodkin. It's nice to talk to you because I thought by now you would have either been shot by someone from the FBI or would be in a long-term prison sentence in some sort of prison somewhere. I don't know how you survived.
I am also surprised to be here. I'm not going to lie to you. There have been many close scrapes. I've been told quite a few times you were lucky on that one. I think guns were drawn for the Donald Trump stunt.
Oh,
and I think
God.
There's been a few close shaves over the years, but I'm here to tell the tale.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you. I survived.
And every single target was absolutely the right thing. You did the right thing. You had the support of the nation behind you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm not sure Ivanka and and what is it, Donald Jr. and what was the other one? I don't know what the is. I think his imagination ran out, didn't it, with the naming of his kids. But
yeah, I think he's got grandchildren called Trump. So they're Trump.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And he wasn't actually originally called Trump, was he? I think.
No, he's not really American, is he? I think probably that's the proof of it.
No, one doubts whether he's actually even human. These are maybe things to come out in the future. 1,000 years later, he's just like, you know, like those long, you know, those bagels that you buy that have never actually been near bread, still just as fresh.
Yes.
10 years later, Donald Trump, 1,000 years later, just comes out and tells us how that was the greatest burial of his life.
Turns out he's a pharaoh.
Well, some evil concoction of because he's this weird combination, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's everything you tell people not to be. He is, and he's succeeding. And that's what's so desperately depressing.
Isn't it just? It's really weird. And then he might come back. I mean, you might be needed again.
The golf balls are ready.
The golf balls, you've still got some.
There's a couple that were left over.
What an extraordinary conversation for a Jewish man to have. I'd like all these golf balls with swastikas on.
It was some awkward phone calls being made. It's, oh dear, I think with the people who I stunt, no matter what one does, you're never going to change them. And maybe that's what makes them good targets, because they are sort of untouchable.
Yeah. But the thing, I think the reason you succeed, so this is me, I'm going to throw compliments at you now. I'm going to say the reason you succeed is because of your commitment to the character you're playing. The fact that so many people, if I showed them a photograph of you, would say, oh, I know who that is. Yeah, that's Lee Nelson. You see, they absolutely believe that that's who you are. And that's down to the commitment you give to the character. You take the sort of risks to make the character really believable.
I think, and I've been learning this with the stand-up I've been doing, that unless one is completely committed, heart, body, soul, mind, to everything about the joke, the concept, whether it's the stand-up comedy or a character or a stunt, it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, some people have suggested some great jokes for me to say, but somehow when it comes out of my mouth, it's just not quite mine. And Jerry Seinfeld's got this great quote that I should either learn or have up somewhere in my office, talking about this magic combination where a comedian is speaking like himself and talking about things that he cares about and moving like himself. And then it all works. And I think nothing has made me realize that, even though you're talking about the characters, that feels more obvious. You've got to commit to that. Than the stand-up comedy. The stand-up comedy I'm doing is myself. I feel like I'm not finishing that journey. Like I'm still just really trying to be more and more true to who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 20 years in, I suppose, really, isn't it? You sort of go, do you know what? I'm going to have a go at just stripping it all away.
Yeah. So the stand-up as myself, which, you know, that's where the focus is going at the moment. We're easing off the arrests for now and the potential fatal shootings by various law enforcements around the world. Yeah, and that is almost the most liberating of everything, because there's no constraints. I mean, obviously, the constraint is you have to speak into a microphone in a room full of people, right? Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you can go anywhere and talk about anything. And it was completely new to me, that whole thing, because I was always so used to, I've got a very methodical brain, a very black and white thinking brain. And so characters become straightforward for me. So, you know, if you want to be Lee Nelson, you have to look like this and sound like this and walk like this and have the attitude of this. Mm. And if you want to, you know, get on stage at Glastonbury and join Kanye West, you need to look like this and sound like this. It's almost because I've got a science background. And
right, yeah. You studied medicine, didn't you?
I studied medicine. And science is incredibly methodical, isn't it? Well, let's try and remember this now. What do? You do that. You start off with a hypothesis, don't you? A very clear layout. This is what I want to prove or disprove. And then you go through the method and you go through the routine of what you did and the conclusion. And it's very, very black and white. Mm-hmm. And art isn't like that. And stand-up, I think, is probably the closest thing I'm always slightly skeptical as a comedian to start sounding like I want to be on Radio 4. but it's the most free thinking. So when I'm myself, I found that at first the most difficult, because what are the boundaries?
Yeah.
What do you say? Well, there's nothing. You have to write the rules. And so that has always been incredibly intimidating for me my whole life. And that's been the sort of greatest hurdle, I guess, to get over, and one that's bringing me the most joy at the moment.
Yeah, because also if you're saying, well, okay, I'm now going to be me, then you start questioning, actually, am I funny? Am I funny unless I do these things?
Yeah, I think for me it was never about being funny, because I always knew I was funny. It's always been in my bones, and my dad was funny, and I've always just made people laugh. I think it was a confidence in oneself. And believe it or not, I was deeply underconfident. And still am in many ways in certain areas. That's just growing. And that's been the journey that I've been on. And so it felt much more comfortable for me to slip in and pretend to be someone else and totally commit to that. And I think that the ADHD diagnosis that I've had recent in adult life, I'm sure I'm not the first to be talking about this on a comedian's podcast, so I won't drone on about it too much. But I think that when you know you don't quite fit in, you spend a lot of your life pretending so other people will like who you are. Mm-hmm. And I remember having that feeling I would be just that nuanced difference person with these people and that different person with these people. And of course, so my youth was spent sort of just trying to adapt in, which is the opposite of what you do when you're confident, when you go. And I'm telling my kids all the time now, you know, be yourself. If you can love yourself, if you can be yourself and relaxed with yourself, then everything opens up.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, how people interpret those things as well. My grandson is autistic. He says that occasionally people look at him as if they don't understand what he's talking about. And I say, if people do that and you're worried about it, just say, I'm joking.
Nice. My kids use the I'm joking thing. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how many times a day. You've just broken the window here. Is it just a joke? No, it doesn't work like that. You've literally broken the window. What's interesting is schools, what do we teach schools? Conform, follow the rules, sit these set exams, go to these universities. Who are the people who have changed humanity? Who are the people who have actually influenced? They're very people who think differently.
Yes.
Because that's the only way we can ever do anything and make any change, any invention, is if we think differently. But all the education is about fitting in and doing everything the same. And it seems mad to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's the whole idea that you, in a way, learn from these other people who've done the thinking. You just learn it.
Yes.
You just take it and absorb it. Mm-hmm. You don't change it. You don't adapt it. And in fact, that's what you need in life. You need people to do that all the time. It's why it's an obsession of mine, the whole idea of education, the fact that we waste so many human resources by not educating people. I mean, in this country, that's true. But also worldwide, it's outrageous that so many people exist who never really get the chance to show their potential because they're not properly educated.
Well, I was outside the class a lot of the time. I should have been in the class. I was sent out. There's a lot of hours. I don't know what the percentage was, but I should have been listening in class. But your grandson, yes, people might look at him. Did you say and say, I don't understand what you're talking about? But that's, and obviously, look, it's easy to, I always say to my kids, it's easier to be an adult because we know who we are and we're comfortable and we have our friends and we feel secure. And it's the hardest thing in the world to be a kid. So it's easy to say, but if he can try and realize that is amazing for him to be able to express opinions that are different to others.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah, all the people I know who, like you, have forged a career and a path that is unique, it's because they are unique. It's because they've used their uniqueness to demonstrate what they think. So when you say somebody's written a joke for you and it doesn't work when you say it, that's the very reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So if any kids are listening, do what you like at school. And that's the path to success, guys.
Yeah. You might learn more standing outside of the classroom than standing in it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, Simon. So you're going to pick four things that you love and one thing that you'd like to bury and forget to put into a time capsule. That's our game. So I hope you have fun doing it and I hope you've had fun thinking about it.
Absolutely, I have. So many to choose from. I'll start with something that flows on from our conversation that we just touched upon. The P45 that I handed Theresa May.
Fantastic.
We'll bury that. It, I guess, represents one of the stunts which I did, which was interrupting Theresa May at the Tory party conference.
Yeah.
And handing her the P45, which was signed from Boris Johnson, and then going over to Boris and saying, well, that went brilliantly, didn't it, Boris? To which he called me a stupid tosser, which was handy for a quote to put on my tour poster. I needed something.
So perfect.
And it was, I guess, like all the stunts, the joke, you know, because I'm not a protester. I'm not there to make a political point. But it was, I think, the best stunts are where you have a concept of reality and comedy merging together in this one moment. So wouldn't it be funny if is simple concept behind any of the stunts. Yeah. If the Prime Minister, who was telling us all how strong and stable she is, and we all knew she was far from and was just teetering on the edge following her disastrous decision to call elections and losing her majority, and wouldn't it be fair to give her a P45 in the midst of her moment in the spotlight, when she is being almost, when our prime ministers are sort of most presidential, isn't it? When they're speaking in front of their conference and they're all getting cheers and everything they say is whoops. And so that was the concept. And that will bring back a few memories and represent quite a few of the other stunts or pranks or whatever you want to call them.
I think what's fabulous about it, Simon, is that giving the Prime Minister a P45, it's such a working class thing. It's such a sort of a normal working person's thing. It's not something that you would associate with a Prime Minister. And yet it puts them in their place. It sort of says, you, like anybody else, are just employed. Don't think you're anything special.
I hadn't thought of it like that. But yeah, absolutely, it does. I guess, and of course, lo and behold, the P45 did come shortly after.
Exactly.
I often think, should I have done that? I didn't know what was to follow. And maybe instead of giving her a P45, I should have given her a note of encouragement and told her to crack on with things. Yeah. You know, what do we have? Boris and Truss and Rishi now. And it's just been just a mess.
I wouldn't blame yourself. Don't blame yourself.
Don't blame
yourself. That's not your fault. That's everybody else's fault. That's the nation's fault. We made that mistake.
Because people felt sorry for her. And you can't punch more up than the most powerful person in the country. No. Aww. And it all went disastrously wrong. And I think that, fun enough, is just part of what happened that whole day, with the letters falling off and her coughing. And it was just a bit of a mess. And I think she's a decent person. I think I know she's a decent person because she took the P45 from me. Instead, there was no grief. Almost like, thank you, filed it there. And I was just gently lowered back. Obviously did too good a job of looking. You talk about getting into the character of really looking like a sort of Tory aide. I had my hair flattened. I had the blue tie that I bought that afternoon in the Arndale Centre in Manchester. And I was there and just got lowered down. I was like, my work here is done. I don't really want to listen to the rest of the speech, and got dragged out. Chance of scum from the Tory.
Perfect.
I'm dragged out and there's a big gaggle of journalists. I think it's the most closest I'll ever come to sort of feeling like, you know, a Justin Bieber type, because there's sort of 50 like fervent, you know, people are ripping stuff up. Someone ripped off my pass, and you're just a thing to them. And all they want is a photo and a quote. And they're walking back, because I remember one of them just walking back, tripping over a bin, just falling on the floor. And the rest of this pack just tramples over them.
Yeah.
And I'm carrying on in character, going, well, yes, I give them the P45. And they're like, well, why'd you do that? And Boris told me to. And they're like, are you really going along with this, guys? When did he tell it to? When did he say? What did he? And I'm giving them these ridiculous quotes and I'm taken into this other room. You talk about worrying about getting shot. Well, I think that's probably the time when I was most genuinely concerned if I get within touching distance, you know, is there the little red spot on the back of the head?
But clearly, as far as security is concerned, it was useless. I mean, you just have to apply to be somebody to go to the conference. And then you can walk right up to the Prime Minister.
It's, the difference between the US and the UK, to get around Trump security, bag swaps and reconnaissance missions and fake ID, and that to get around the CIA and the FBI and the Secret Service, to get around Theresa May's security at the Tory party conference, I had to buy a ticket.
Oh, brilliant.
But, I don't want to diss, the police have always been great to me. And I also want to, because there's always this, people after any stunt, like, well, it could have been this way, could have had a gun, he could have been. And I'm never going to rush at people. I'm not going to be aggressive. And I haven't got a gun and I haven't got a knife. And I like to think that if I did, I wouldn't have got through.
Yes.
So I handed her, I'm not sure how good my origami skills are, but there's very limited a weapon I can make with an A4 piece of card. So
it was beautifully displayed, though, as you handed it to her. It was just turned to the cameras. There it was in big letters, P45. It was Even if they'd not picked up the sound, it would have worked. It was perfect.
My Photoshop skills were being scrambled to the core the night before of trying to, what does it look like? Let me try and make it good. Well, you can see I'm nervous. There's a little shaking arm going up there. I think that's probably the most nervous I've ever been for a particular stunt, because it was like, is this the moment? And I'd spent a long time beforehand sat in the conference room, and I made sure I got as close to the front I could get. And so what that meant is queuing up with all the Conservative Party, absolute faithful. These are the biggest Tory supporters. They look like any party. The people who are genuine, passionate fans of a political party who turn up to the conferences and queue at the front, they've got a screw loose. Mm-hmm. So the conversations that I had to have, they're asking me what's going on in my council and the by-election, and I'm just having to talk and talk and talk all day. These lovely old ladies who are mad as hatters and moaning about this and talking about the tea and the service and the things. And they're there for hours just to get to the front. And then they open the doors. I mean, you thought Glastonbury was bad. Everyone runs in, clattering each other out of the way with handbags. And I just run to the front. And I got a great seat because I knew that was going to be key. And I'm sat next to some quite high-ranking Tories chatting to me. And I'm just, so to be honest, it was an intense day. It's when you think you're going to be rumbled. That's when the intensity comes. And when you're under such scrutiny. And I'm there with a notepad just writing absolute piffle during her speech, just thinking, shall I go now? Shall I go now? Shall I go now? Shall I go now? And I picked the right time.
It was perfect timing. It's fantastic. So I'm delighted to put that P45.
Excellent.
That would absolutely represent all the courage and the genius of those pranks. Thank you. Okay, so what's number two?
Number two is, I'll go for a stethoscope.
Right. You studied medicine.
I studied medicine.
And then you actually practiced it as well in Manchester.
Practice makes perfect. And I obviously didn't practice enough. And I guess we go from the rule breaking, which definitely comes more natural to me, to the rule following, which was always a square peg in a round hole. And I see my medical degree because people say you wasted your bloody time, didn't you? And I don't see it like that at all. For me, it's like one of my greatest achievements to get that, to achieve that, the hard work I had to put in. And again, I don't want to rabbit on about ADHD, but I didn't know I had it then. I remember my friends. We lived in this amazing flat. There's eight of us mates living in Didsbury in this huge, huge house. And the carnage that went on there was just such fun. And I remember my friends sitting on their bed and reading a medical textbook, an anatomy book, a physiology book, and they take it in. I was like, have you got some superpower? And for me to work, put it this way, my now wife dumped me because she simply didn't believe that the amount of hours I was putting in for my finals was just me working. She's like, yeah, okay, clearly you are, seeing someone else or not interested in me. And I just, I'm just working. Doors get locked, post-it notes around the room, the tiny writing, meticulous tiny writing to just really focus and learn what goes on in the liver and what goes on in the kidneys. And I've always been fascinated by what goes on in the human body. So it was never a chore, all the learning bits. Funnily enough, the chore was working the 16-hour shifts in the dilapidated hospitals, in student accommodation, where it's just peeling paints and fire doors slamming in your face and horrible, lonely, cold, crappy. We can't treat people like this. And I remember this moment when I moved into comedy and when I started visiting production companies, and I'd go into these companies and they have huge televisions and sofas and there's a bowl of sweets and there's a reception. It's like, what is this? Like, wow. And it's just, it's sad, isn't it?
It's crazy.
The way round the world works.
It's crazy. Well, particularly in your case, you've got the fact that you've done all that work. You think all that work. And I had to make myself do that. It didn't come easily. So you do all that work, years and years of study. You get to the point where you can actually practice the medicine and still you're being paid a pittance and you're being forced to live in this squalor.
And you know what? My wife's a teacher. So I think with any job you do, there needs to be something that keeps you in. And I'm not going to say a pittance because we weren't paid a pittance, but it's not high. And I think compared to other countries, you know, it is very low, but it's, there needs to be something. And if you're treated badly and paid badly and the working conditions are bad, what's in it for talented people who can have a choice? Why are they going to stay?
Yes, quite. And also, if you're constantly told that any fuss you make is because you're lazy, it's your fault that the thing's not working.
Yes. Well, that was always at school. I was reading some of my reports and they're quite brutal about me. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it reads like a complete textbook of ADHD back in the day when they didn't know what it was. Like the headmaster's reviewing everything. It just doesn't make sense. He can concentrate on certain things. His writing becomes neat and engaged, and others, he's just all over the place. What's going on? But in the hospital, it's not nice. It's hard and horrible. If it's going to be that, as you say, pay people through the nose, they'll stick with it, right? Mm. But if it's not paid well, make it lovely to work in. And you've got talented people, you've got brilliant people, doctors and nurses, but it's just not nice. I mean,
ironically, nearly everybody goes into, they study that thing and they decide to be a doctor because they want to help people, because they think the job is going to be fantastically rewarding because of what they can do for people. So they don't do it for the money, but eventually that will just wear you down. Is this all I'm worth?
Yeah. What's that phrase? A mark of a society is how they treat their prisoners, isn't it? And I think maybe a mark of society, how they treat their doctors. It's like, surely, how can bankers turn up for work in these glass structures? You know, we've got so much money. Let's just make this one look like a pickled cucumber, you know. And then you've got these porter cabins with buckets collecting the leaking water. And you're like, what do these people do? Oh, they save everyone's lives. You know, really? Mm-hmm. Imagine someone coming down to earth and you having to explain that these are the people in these conditions who do this level of important job. So, you know, the love and respect I got to people in the NHS is amazing, but that goes back to stuff I was saying at the beginning. Unless I'm totally committed to everything about it, I just can't. And I decided at the end of the shift of the junior doctor, the last one, you know, the changeover. Mm. And I decided that's it. My love, it's changed now. It's changed. I have to try. I have to give comedy a go. Totally naive. Didn't know what I was doing. Had I really known, I might not have done it. right? It's like I was blessed by how little I actually knew and drove through the night and then rang on the bell back in London to my parents. I'm going to be living with you for a little while, guys, which was naive and daft, but it's worked out all right.
Yes, it has. But it's lovely that you want to put the stethoscope in there.
Well, the stethoscope, the knowledge is still great. The knowledge, I haven't forgotten it. That's fun enough. I forget lots of things, but it's fun that I've retained a lot of the medical knowledge because it is so interesting. And I guess I'm still proud of my little stethoscope.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, right, that's number two. Right, what's number three?
Okie diddly dokey, it's ad break time, but we'll be back in a parcel, a letter, or maybe just a jiffy. See you soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to part two of My Time Capsule with the comedian Simon Brodkin. Let's find out what else he'd like to have in his time capsule, shall we? Well, you're listening, so I assume that's what you're hoping for. See you at the end.
Number three. Aha. This is going to be my current car, which is a third-hand 2006 bashed-up grey Toyota Prius. Huh. With 208,000 miles on the clock. Wow. And I guess when I turn up, you know, I did the Apollo the other day, which was amazing and mm-hmm. a joy and a buzz, and it was sold out, and I've added another one. And I guess people imagine me turning up in, you know, my metallic black Mercedes, someone opening the door for me. And me, the truth of the matter is, I'm going up and down the motorway. I'm driving in this clattered old bit. There's wrappers on the floor. There's stuff from my kids that they haven't thrown away. They stuff things everywhere. And this sort of workhorse of a car, which I'm strangely proud of, that's done the miles. And I guess comedy is an apprenticeship. And that's something that is maybe not often talked about. You can't just get it. And what's so interesting about comedy is the best comedians make it look effortless.
Yeah.
The best comedians make it look like, oh, they've just turned up, had a funny thought, rolled out, and it's an illusion. What you're actually seeing is the years and years and years of work to make it look effortless.
Yeah.
And the car, I guess, represents all those hours, all those miles up and down the country, from the little pubs where you're giving loads of people a lift back and you're not even getting paid, or people might give you petrol money, to then I remember getting one of my first, after I got signed to a management company, they said, you know, go, it was about an hour and a half away, and they said, you're going to earn, it was a couple hundred quid. And that was like a real, real moment.
Yeah.
And then building and going to little theatres and slightly big theatres, and the hours and miles that's put in. I think the poor thing's on its last legs, I have to say. But I might need to bury it pretty soon.
Good thing to put it in there then. Let's keep it safe. It must represent, like you say, the hours that it's put in. But also, when you're driving in those situations, having done a gig and you're going through the night, getting home late and everything, you, like all comedians, will have spent hours and hours in that car rethinking things. Just going through it again and again and again. How can I make that better? How can I refine that?
Of course.
And so that's those hours of thought that you've put in that car.
It's a mobile dustbin, for one. It has become that, but it's a mobile office.
Yeah.
It goes through everything. It goes from the thinking and the planning of the set and the, you know, you're practicing on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way back, it's often, yes, I'm reflective, but I'm also trying to cut off. And it's been my late night radio.
Right.
Calmness as the roads start to get quiet. And of course, occasionally they close the motorways.
Lovely.
Just when you need it at 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's been the sanctuary as well as the madness beforehand as well. Because that's probably my calmest moment of the day. Mm-hmm. After I've done the show, that's the first time I start to actually go, okay, you can now relax. And then I have my food, I get out my Tupperware. It is not rock and roll. I guess that's what the Prius represents as well, because people think, whoa. Fun enough, after I did the Apollo, people came backstage afterwards and it was lovely to see people, but it's always so funny because I'm not sure what they're expecting, but it certainly isn't my, you know, the half-eaten sweet potato from beforehand, you know, my towel on the floor from the rush shower, you know, some dirty socks. It's not rock and roll. And I think tour managers, they love comedians, because if they've come from the music industry, it's just brilliant. You've got these really quite often nerdy guys who like want to sit down at their computer beforehand and be left alone and get like a herbal tea instead of like smashing the place up and asking the tour manager to get various illicit bundles. This is like, we're just chill. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks so much, though. Yeah, I'm okay. Oh, a water will be. Is it okay to get a water? So that is, as I say, after a show, That's the first time the brain can properly switch off, when I feel like I've done enough today. I've deserved it. If a show's gone well, if it's gone badly, which it rarely does, then forget about it. That's going on. The mind is not stopping them.
No.
So, yeah, many a person's got a lift in that car. Many of my kids are in the back of the car, but really it's the workhorse that's allowed me to build and build and build and do the miles and do the hours on the stage.
Fantastic. And now Screwed Up, that's a big tour you're doing. Big venues.
Screwed Up is the biggest tour.
Yeah.
Big venues. And that is what's been the joy about moving from the characters into myself, in that people have responded to it, you know, better than I could imagine. I was just hoping for sort of acceptance. And often people advise me not to, because all the stuff you're doing in character is Lee Nelson. It's working. What are you doing?
Mm.
But again, going back to the original conversation, I think if something represents you and it's true to you and what you think and how you feel, there's a connection there with the audience that can maybe outdo any character, out any pretense, any facade. And it feels very different as well, because getting off stage, it never used to feel like me. It was like, oh, job done, finished. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I own it and I feel it. And yeah, the Screwed Up tour, it's called Screwed Up because of you know, the various screwed up things that I do in my life and have gone on in my life and in my brain. And yeah, that's just exploded, as well as the social media stuff, which it's, I think, sprung from a lot of the ticket buying and the following and the success has come from, you know, these huge numbers on social media. Which,
yeah.
And there's social media, yeah, obviously it's has some awful things going on, but equally in terms of, as a creative, as someone who can throw things out there, there's no gatekeeper. There's no one to say you can and can't do that, which is constant in television, constant.
Yeah.
And the response to it, that gave me the confidence, you know, talking about lacking confidence, to see people, oh my God, they're liking this. No one's making them like this. I'm throwing little clips out as myself doing stand-up. And that this is, wow. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And that sort of helped. And so I always owe those initial people who got me on that role a tremendous amount.
Well, I think that actually the more that you feel that you're watching someone who is being genuine with you, the more you buy into it, the more you become almost as if you know that person, or you start to feel as if you know them. We've all been there with that situation where you go to see someone, you think to yourself, I come to see this person every time because I feel a familiarity with them and I feel a bond. And that, I think, happens much more when you're doing what you're doing now.
Totally. And look, I don't know other comedians deeply. I know myself, and I know that if they do come and see me, I think they are getting to know me. Mm. So I don't think it's a false. I'm not going off stage and going, you know, right, get me out of here. Warm up the Prius. It's, I love it. I'm loving their engagement in me as much as I hope they're enjoying me. It's give and take. And I am being truthful. I am really talking about what I think. And so there is that connection. And the exciting thing is, what's the anything could be next? I can write about anything and talk about anything and go anywhere. And that's cool.
Yeah. I really like the fact that you've worked with Al Murray as well, because I see that same thing there, that in fact you create a character that people start to assume is you. Both of you also were making a point by saying the opposite. Do you know what I mean?
Al's amazing, and his character is amazing. What his character has, the pub landlord, is an ability greater than Lee Nelson's to look at any situation in the world and filter the pub landlord mind through that. And that's amazing. Yeah. And that's, I think, why it's lasted so long and been so incredibly successful. Al was amazing to me. He gave me sort of my first chance on television with his sketch show. And he got me involved in that. And that's where Jason Bent, the Premier League footballer character.
That's a great character.
The dim and loaded Premier League footballer. That was where the first interviews were shown on his sketcher. So, yeah, Al's amazing.
Amazing, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to put that Prius in there before it dies.
I
might even hoover the back seat.
No, don't do that, mate. Honestly, there's definitely no need. Who knows what you'll find?
Oh, brilliant. So what have we got left? We've got one more good thing that you want to put in and one you want to bury.
Let's put in my signed Sergio Aguero Manchester City football shirt.
Ah, because you spent all that time in Manchester. So you're a Manchester City man, are you?
So I am a big Manchester City fan. Mm-hmm. And getting accused of being a Glory supporter is always amusing to me, because, you know, I was probably spent more hours and more time watching us when we were absolute rubbish. I know that you've heard the chant, "Where were you when you were SHIT?" Well,
yeah.
I was there standing in the rain against Sheffield United in the first division with rain coming down me and an unprotected Kippax stand at Main Road, which was a right dive. And so, yeah, my dad's from Manchester and his family's there. He gave me at first the punishment of being a City fan at school in London during just bleak years. And now the joy of being a City fan.
The glory. But also started in many ways by that amazing moment with Aguero.
Started in many ways by that amazing, amazing moment of Aguero scoring in the 94th minute, the last minute winner against QPR to win us our first Premier League title. And we haven't stopped winning since then.
No.
And I think, you know, there's other moments before then as well, which sort of in the playoff finals in 1999, when we beat Gillingham, which I was there at, and remembering that moment as the sort of almost the sliding doors moment of Manchester City, when we could have stayed in, we were in Division 2 then, so that's Division 1 now, and got that incredible, incredible 95th minute that Dickoff scored and got us 2-2 and won penalties, and then we went up to the Championship, and then that sort of carried on that momentum.
But like so many supporters of so many clubs, you could well have been stuck in that situation where you say, we used to win things, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when they bought Dennis Law from Manchester United, we were good.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what we were clinging on to for so many years. I don't want to make this too City-centric, because obviously most people listening aren't City fans, but I think that I don't know what football is other than incredibly, incredibly entertaining and distracting and amazing and unifying and joyous. Obviously, there's some dark side occasionally as well. But that Manchester City moment, the joy that football gives me. Give me a football match over a play. I have to say that, because just the drama. You couldn't write that stuff of some of the things that have happened to City and, of course, many clubs. And yeah, to have that signed shirt.
How did you come about that? Where did you get it from?
I got it from, I've got two valued signed City shirts. One of them is when I actually worked at the football club, when I was during my medical training. There's a bit where you have to work in the community and you can apply to various things. And I thought, hang on, let's apply Manchester City. I'm studying in Manchester and I was going all the time. And I got to work with the physio there, the doctor, Dr. Groark, I think his name is. So it was brilliant. I was just around all these players and I was just there. I was running onto the pitch. I actually meant to be running onto the pitch, unlike when I was not meant to be running on the pitch, when I pretended to warm up with the City squad, you know, a few years later. At Goodison Park, but I was there and I was surrounded by the squad, and I was, it wasn't the Premier League, so they wouldn't let me anywhere near them now, you know, but it was amazing. So they all signed that. And then this one came about because a friend of a friend works with this person's agent's nephew's cousin. They knew what a huge fan I was. And I was like, that would be the most, if you can even get that, that would be the most incredible thing. And yeah, I guess that does represent the changing of the moment people could start accusing me of actually being a Glory supporter. Yep. But it is, I have to pinch myself now with what we've got going on at the club. It's amazing. Yes. And the family get such pleasure from it as well. So I get to hang out with my kids and we watch the games. And yeah, thank you. Thanks for the joy that it's given us.
Lovely. I know exactly what you're talking about. But annoyingly for you, probably, I have the opposite, which is that... I'm a Red.
Okay.
And so I had the same thing at school. Why on earth would you support that team?
Right.
Has-beens.
Right.
Right through my school life. And then suddenly this extraordinary period comes along. So, you know, everything changes in football all the time. So enjoy it while you can.
We can take lessons, life lessons. Nothing's forever. The empires will fall. Enjoy what you can.
Yeah.
And you know what? The pleasure that I got from seeing City winning at Blackburn on the last day of the season and getting promoted, it's the same. It's as seeing us, you know, winning the FA Cup final. It's that magical moment.
The wonderful thing is also, from my point of view, having been through it, I can watch a Man City game, I can watch them win those things and know what the crowd are going through and, yeah. and be pleased for them.
Yeah, well, I can now not hang up when you said that you were a United fan through shame of not even being able to look you in the eye. But the times are good now for me to be on a yeah. podcast with a United fan as the host. I can now stand tall, which yeah. has been a long, long time coming. Well, we might have another FA Cup final of City yeah. United FA Cup final this year.
Yeah, well, I look forward to seeing you win that.
But yeah, we'll be fighting each other and look up. Go, oh, it's you! give me a hug.
Okay, well, we only quickly have to put in something that you want to bury and forget.
Let's show the world just how lovely my wife is and how I might not be the perfect husband. We will bury the plane tickets that I never used for we went on honeymoon, but we didn't use these flights because I got too drunk at our wedding. And I left the plane tickets at the party. And when my wife said to me, do you have the tickets? And I said, in my drunken state, yes, I do. And of course, in the morning, when I woke up, because we were staying in the Gatwick Hotel, that wasn't the honeymoon bit. That was in order to get us away for the honeymoon as quick as possible. And I turned round to see my new wife absent and everything started rushing into one's head as it does, recovering from hangover. Oh my God. We don't have the tickets. We're not going on the honeymoon. She's left me. So my first thought on the first morning of my wedding day as a married man was my wife has left me and I've left the tickets and I've ruined everything. Mm. She hadn't left me. She was actually downstairs in the premiere in breakfast thinking, what a bastard, but I'm still not going to miss out on the breakfast, which is included. And we couldn't get the flight. We'd missed the flight.
Oh, no.
And this is my official apology in public for that. It was, yeah. So I got carried away, which I have a tendency to do, okay? A man's got to let his hair down from time to time. And maybe the hair came a little too far down too early in the night and carried on for many, many hours. And then, yeah, so that was, thanks for her sticking with me. We did eventually have an amazing honeymoon. I think my parents felt just sorry more for her, I think. I went, you know what, we'll buy you some plane tickets. And so thanks to them as well, who buried me out of a hole. But yeah, that was a little moment of my life. I'm not proud, but we'll bury them so we never have to remember.
Yes, indeed. A good test of a relationship, though, that early
on. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. One of us passed. I'm not sure who, but I'm glad she's still stuck with me. I haven't forgotten a thing since, of course, and I'm now the perfect husband and father in every single way.
Of course.
You'll be delighted.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that's on record.
As long as you've cleared that one up.
In fact, if you Google you, that's what comes up first.
Perfection, I believe, if you look there. Yeah. An early mistake, get out of the way, and then go for it.
He's learned his lesson. Oh, Simon, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for being a guest on My Time Capsule.
My absolute pleasure. It's been a joy.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule. With me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Simon Brodkin. God bless you, Governor, for listening, as they say in the old black and white movies. If you had fun, well, we have over 350 past episodes still available to listen to, and we release a new episode twice a week. In other words, if you can keep up with us, you're doing blooming well, me old cocksparrow. If you subscribe for free, then we'll let you know every time a new episode comes out. Or you could follow me or My Time Capsule on social media, where we talk of little else. Well, quite a lot else, actually, but we also go on about each episode. So if that information would be useful, join us and join the conversation. Or email us at mytimecapsulepodcast@gmail.com. The theme tune by Pastor P's Music is available on Spotify, and Acast Plus is available as an option for listeners who would like to get this podcast ad-free and might want to hear our bonus podcast every Wednesday, My Time Capsule The Debrief. Details of how to subscribe for only £2.99 a month are in the written description of this episode. Thank you very much. This was a cast-off production produced by John Fenton Stevens.
Right, maybe see you at one of Simon's gigs later this year. There's a link in the usual place. But until then, or until the next episode of My Time Capsule, let's celebrate the arrival of spring in the only way possible with a rendition of this classic spring song from the great Tom Lehrer. Join in if you know it. Spring is here, spring is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. La 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 la. La 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 la. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we poison pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park. La la. There you are. That's cheered us all up, isn't it? Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.